So at the far end of the table, we have Marc Duvivier, who's the Vice President of Engineering from Wave Express. He tells me he's been there since the beginning. We have, next we have Michael Dolan, who's a consultant, has done a lot of work with DirecTV and has been involved in both the ADFIF and DAZE, and I'm sure will be able to offer some great comparisons for us. Bill Handler from Chiron is in charge of their department that's looking at ways to author this kind, and they have some very interesting ways to do that with a regular old character generator. We have Scott Boyd, who's a program manager for tools at Microsoft. And we have Darren Trift, who is the director of business development for PBS Interactive. He can give the PBS perspective on this very well. And we have, last but not least, Nanda Kumar, who's the vice president of engineering and chief technology operator from Triveni Digital. So I'm going to, now I was at a thing in Minneapolis the other day where they gave us each 2 minutes to talk, and then they had this giant Chinese gong. I didn't bring that along, but if anyone needs a reminder, I'm going to limit everybody to 3 minutes, and I'll just ting a little glass here if you get carried away. So let's start with Marc. Yeah, so anything you want to comment about reacting to what I said? Did I miss some things?
Am I on?
Yes.
I'm good. I was actually thinking something over there, which is why I kind of got on the spot, because I was thinking about one of the issues that is new to the world of broadcasting. I'm actually new to the world of broadcasting because I came out of really the data transaction side of industry and came into the broadcast industry. And one of the things that's been interesting to me, and I think was touched on in the talk, was that there's competing standards. And the broadcast world is now moving into the world of internet standards, and the internet world is moving into the world of broadcast standards. And this was really pointed out to me in your talk when you mentioned something that was actually a key part of the experience I've had over the last 14, 18 months with Wave Express, which is when you get into the broadcast world, you have standards, or at least traditionally you have standards, and it's really nice. I know what my platform is, and my ATFEF platform has 1 megabyte of memory. And that's great, because I know I have 1 megabyte of memory, and then I realize that I only have 1 megabyte of memory, and I can't use flash. And that's not so great. And one of the things I think is going to be a really interesting and real challenge for the entire industry is to figure out how different users with different amounts of bandwidth, some with back channels, some without back channels, some with cable modem high-speed back channels or DSL high-speed back channels, in different parts of the country with different kinds of boxes, some of which are set-top boxes and some of which are PCs, can all be reached by broadcasters and their content producers and their networks. Because it's a real challenge. And so one of the things we've focused on, and I really felt like you went through the litany of issues. I mean, you really covered an awful lot in your talk. One of the things we really focused on is issues of what would it be to be a universal platform. And so we built ourselves primarily on top of Microsoft because the platform is very rich and very powerful and has a lot of good things. Has some bad things too. We know, you know, some of the issues, both cost as well as functionality issues. Is it as reliable as a set-top box and so forth? But I think one of the key things that you talked about that I think is something for the audience to think about is what does it mean to develop content in networks when you don't know what your client looks like?
Very good. Thank you. Michael Dolan.
Well, the first thing I want to comment on is as the father of the term DDE, many people refer to standards around the studio and the facility by their SMPTE number, and so I'm sure this will, over time, become known as 363, the number that's been assigned to the main piece of it. And the term DDE will be lost, and the clever marketing people, the people building products, will come up with much more clever names than either DDE or ATVEF. One of the things that that you brought up is the fact that there are multiple standards. You have the ATVEF, which has evolved into the SMPTE work. You have ATSC DAZE, which is a similar enhanced application environment. You have work going on in the cable industry right now through Open Cable and SCTE. And then about the last year or so, the ITU, both ITUR and ITUT, have taken an interest in trying to bring some harmony worldwide, because not only do we have these standards that I just mentioned in the United States, but there's similar activities in the DVB MHP, as well as in Japan and the ARIBE area as well. So this is going to take a little bit more settling out before, as the world grows smaller from broadcasters, and people are producing content for distribution outside the United States and outside the United States for distribution within the United States, it's going to be important to have a standard that's going to work, you know, across these boundaries. So the work of the ITU in this area and the work of these other standards industries really needs to help converge. You want me to continue on days? Or?
Well, let's get to that a little later. Great.
You're the boss.
Bill.
Okay, so technology's good. Let's talk about content in a second. So no problem. We'll just have the web guys do it. This is HTML. Everything's fine. Well, a couple things. You know, if we have time later, I'll tell anyone who likes. This isn't exactly just HTML. I've yet to find any two ATVEF receivers that act the same with the same piece of content, even within ATVEF, which is standard. Second of all, your web operation pretty well integrated with your television production operation? Most people would say no, and I find...
Bill's got a great sense of humor.
I find, for instance, that... And not impugning either side. I find that typically people on the web production side are not well acquainted with the workflow and paradigms of television production, and vice versa. The twain don't meet very elegantly. Even without interactive television, they have difficulty using each other's assets, using each other's production techniques. And in my opinion, for interactive television to be compelling, the interactivity has to be tightly woven into the framework of the program. It has to be a part of it from the start, not something that's grafted on later. A lot of our decision to concentrate on the tool space for this stuff is to try and solve some of those kinds of problems. There are all kinds of other problems no one talks about in ATVEF interactive television. When you have applications that come from different programming groups that load up different sets of JavaScript, you can hang set-top boxes. How do you feel when you have to reboot your TV? How's the cable operator going to feel when their clients are calling saying, hey, I had to reboot my TV, that's bad. There are a lot of little holes in this thing, but the good side is this is really happening. People are looking at this. There are clear revenue streams associated with it on the commercial side as well, so it has a good chance of getting out there. Standardization will probably lag behind what are, in fact, de facto standards. So, for instance, although ATVEF doesn't specify flash, certainly most ATVEF receivers support some level of flash. By the way, I should mention, Bruce, I think NORPAC is just showing a VANC data thing that does this at the show. You may want to talk to Jim. But I think what will happen is de facto commercial standards will emerge, that it will be very difficult to have, you know, impose work of a standardization committee on this stuff. You'll have a sort of mix after.
Thank you, Bill. Scott.
Well, you know, I just have to say, and I have like two pages of stuff, so I can't go through all of it, unfortunately. But
it's like really fast.
It is complex, but then again, it took three very smart guys the better part of a day to dub a VHS tape to S-video in my lab the other day because our VHS deck wasn't on sync and we didn't have a TVC. So it seems like you guys have already got complex surrounded to some extent. It's, you know, it yeah. The problem, I take heart from the fact that, you know, we have some very smart companies trying to solve the complexity problem, trying to solve the integration problem. A lot of things go away when your automation system becomes smart. And if, you know, and you have CC inserters, you have the closed caption inserters from folks like NORPAC, the same way you're going to need, you know, the Transport B inserter from probably, guess what, same folks a lot of times. And as Bill says, there are revenue streams associated with it. And that's, you know, the same reason why we don't produce or synchronize advertisements is because the stations want to get their fingers dirty and make the extra revenue from changing things downstream.
Okay.
And that's, I think, what's going to drive these stations. And I think, you know, it's not a drive that maybe your organization has. I can understand that. The commercial side of the organizations, I think, the technology is going to drive itself in to where the video, all of it, is no longer a black box eventually. It's not just a tape that we play at some point.
So it'll get simpler.
No, it'll get more complex.
Oh, okay. I was hoping.
A bit more money will be made.
Okay, thank you. Darren.
You know, listening to the presentation, it occurred to me, now I understand why no one asks me and my friends and family what I do anymore. it is very complicated. I think that what's very important for us to focus on is separating the lab from the home and looking not just at the technology and what the technology can do in an ideal world, but what we can do now to have an impact in the market. And if you look at the various value chain, I mean, you look at what do the stations want in terms of reaching their local audiences, what do national producers want in terms of putting enhancements over national programs, how the two meet, what do the cable systems want, what can the cable systems support, and then, of course, what does the viewer want, which tends to be the last question we ask and probably should be the first. And so I think what's really important is to take a careful look at your market and target your efforts at what's going on locally with your local cable system and what they're supporting. And if they're not supporting anything, to experiment with the analog platforms like WebTV and AOLTV and at least get the methodology and the process and the comfort level up before you make tremendous investments in technology, particularly for Transport B.
Okay. Nandu.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun working with PBS on the ATWIF trials.
Indeed.
It's been very exciting, very educational, and very rewarding. It's nice to see enhancements come through the system. I have a couple of slides here. I need a crutch, so it helps me explain things a little better. As Bruce was mentioning, we were feeding enhancements nationally using our Skyscraper products and then locally. And really, we were trying to support as many of the different kinds of synchronization modes that Bruce mentioned, both the bypass mode, which is simple, inexpensive, and low risk. We wanted to make sure that people actually got to see enhancements on the set-top box after this very short integration period. We also implemented station synchronization, and especially at Bruce's station, and that was fantastic. I don't think we could have done it at any other station at this time. Don Heppelman and Bruce were able to handle any kind of complexity. I mean, it seemed for them just a piece of cake. Other stations, definitely there is a lot of training required and preparation required before stations can handle data. So we definitely see various levels of sophistication and readiness and preparedness to handle data enhancements. Looking at the specification and the implementation the implementation of the standards, if you look at, let's say, the OSI stack, look at the seven levels, you can see that different, in data casting, different parts of this stack are owned by different standards or regulatory committees. And there are some areas where there are multiple ways of getting data up or the binding up. For example, how does one do data discovery from an MPEG-2 transport stream, even at the systems level and above? How does one encode IP packets? And those are some areas which are currently underspecified, which is why there seems to be quite a bit of uncertainty as to exactly how to do it. But with SMPTE stepping in and helping address some of this, I think that'll resolve it. The other issue is the one that Bill and Mark pointed out, is really in ATWIF specifications and most other kinds of standards, usually have options. And the server can implement a subset of the options, whether it's ATSC and the 18 formats or whatever it is. And the receiver must be able to deal with all allowed variations. And what we are seeing in the trials is that not all of the receivers out there can handle all of the variations. And so, that's one of the main issues that we find.
Okay.
So there are lots of other stories, but when we can get together, we'll be happy to share those with you.
Thank you. I'm going to mix this up. I have some questions of my own I'm bound to ask. Let's get the microphones ready. Let's take a couple of questions from the floor. We got any questions ready here? You're all bounding with thoughts and ideas. I'm sorry, right here.
Listening to all the things you've said, there's one thing that I just haven't seen, and you're assuming that the person is watching you all the time. We get a lot of phone calls saying, jeepers, the time was off by 30 seconds and I missed the first 5 minutes of the show or whatever. When you're talking about forward caching, if they're not watching the station, they're not going to get the forward cache, so it's all missing. How are you going to deal with that?
Seems like a Nandu question.
This is an interesting question. This is the case not only if people turn on set-top boxes late or switch from channel to channel. It's really very important in how the content is authored and played out and when the enhancements are expected to appear. So we expect that as content producers, authors become familiar, we expect that content will probably be sent well after the show starts, and then the first enhancement appears after the show starts, maybe a few minutes after the show starts and not right at the beginning. Because if you're going to switch channels right at the time that the show starts, you're going to miss the first enhancement if it appears right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I think there has to be a level of sort of playing with enhanced television before you figure out exactly how to start.
And one of the pleasant surprises for me was that the content was just continuously sent over and over and over again. So I could tune away, I could come back, and it would refresh. Or I could have arrived late, and it would refresh. There was another question over here. Where was the, right in the front?
Yeah, right here.
Oh.
Back here.
Okay.
We were involved in the Trivini test, and as I've been saying all along, the box, the receiver, was a piece of junk. I mean, just the way it worked, it did a lot of things that it shouldn't have done. So you got to get the receivers right. I don't care if it's a test or not. It should be a simple thing by now. It's been, 2 years? And they keep getting better and better. But the Trivini, the Zenith box, had a lot of pitfalls in it. So,
Nanda, do you want to talk about that?
I think
at least at ours it did.
A lot of the boxes that were sent out, they're obviously engineering prototypes that were manufactured in small quantities. And I think, Al, you may be talking about some of the video output problems with the and that was observed at several locations where the display, the video display itself was...
No, it had all sorts of problems. It would lock up on us. We'd get jerking motions in the video. Just all sorts of numerous problems.
I think it would be helpful. When was the... It's not a standard yet, right, Michael? DDE is not done.
The work in SMPTE is still work in process, although there's 4 out of the 6 documents that are getting ready for trial publication, so it's getting real close.
So although ATFEF has been around for, how long? 2 years?
Months now.
DDE is not done, so I think it's good to recognize that. Darren, did you want to comment?
Yeah, I did. We acknowledge the technical problems with the Zenith box, but I think it's really important to understand that Trivini stepped forward and made a bold step that no other receiver companies have done, and that is they have manufactured 100 boxes and went through a laborious process of installing them in the homes and a huge technical outfit at 5 public television stations with a data hub and head end. So that's why these are called trials. And the amount of learning that we've achieved and the documentation of all that is going to be very valuable. And the next go around, those boxes will be better. So we acknowledge it, but I think you have to look at the broader picture and what was accomplished for this trial.
Okay, it's all in the same thing, though. It's all the receivers are getting better, better, better. And this particular box needs improvement.
One more, and it's not just the Zenith receiver. The DCT 5000s that the MSOs are putting out, those are crashing. The SA Explorer 6000 boxes, those are having trouble. The only boxes in the market that work are the thin client devices that have been out there for a number of years. So it's across the board. These are complicated set-tops.
Okay, we got to uncomplicate them. Because the average Joe wants it to work.
Actually, if I could add my comments to Darren's, and we're actually going to step in defense of Trivini because we're having plenty of problems with our own receiver. I really think technology-wise, we're in a very early stage of the maturity process. If you take a look, and I'm going to throw this out as an example, the PC, which I would argue has gotten considerably more reliable over the last 5 years, lots of people, myself included, would say isn't reliable enough. And that's a very complicated box, and it's been around for roughly 20 years now as an industry. I think these boxes are in an early maturity cycle, and it will take quite a bit of time to work out all the various interoperability, technology, and other problems, but we will get there.
I think everyone's acknowledged this is an issue. Unless you really feel strongly, I would like to move on.
Just a quick question. I think in order to make this standard really accepted and widely deployed in industry, it's important for not only Zenith to implement ATWIF, but also the Sonys and the Toshibas and so on. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the focuses of this NAB is for us, you know, from a server side, a standards-based approach is to make sure as many of the set-top box vendors are prepared to accept and start implementing and bring these boxes to market. So there will be competition, there will be progress in the standards space.
Okay. I wanted to ask a question about, now we've heard, there's been a lot of talk over the years about DAZE, and I know within some of my colleagues in public television we're concerned that, well, if ATFEF is so successful, then we'll maybe lose some enthusiasm for DAZE, and DAZE has some of the features that are necessary to do some of the things we'd like to do from a constant standpoint that you can't do with ATFEF. So I kind of want to ask, what's the future of DAZE, and what's the prospect of being successful, and what's its relationship to ATFEF? And I think this is a great question to first pitch to Michael.
Just getting back for the DDE thing.
Yeah.
So, ATSC embarked about 4 years ago on an application environment that's become known as DAZE, the Digital Television Application Software Environment. And it's currently completed a first round of ballot with an ATSC technology committee. And the environment is both a declarative module, if you will, and a procedural module based on Java technology. The declarative module is based on XHTML, which is kind of a next generation HTML, if you follow any of the W3C activities. And the relationship is that the XHTML is a future step, if you will. As HTML is to XHTML on the web, ATVEF is to DAZE, you know, in terms of where it is on the timeline of things. Being optimistic in the areas of developing these standards, because I was involved in the original ATVEF work and then now with the SMPTE work, we're always optimistic and overly so that these will be adopted sooner than they really are. And the rollout time is always much longer than you think it is. And you'd think we'd learn after color television and other things like that, that it just takes time for any kind of major change like this to roll out. And it takes, you know, you're usually off by an order of magnitude or two. And so I think what we're seeing here is that when this started out, that you had ATVEF that was being deployed by a small set of closed environments. You had ATSC embarking on the next generation standard, and we come to find ourselves, well, ATVEF isn't really as widely deployed as anyone thought it was going to be 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, now we're catching up with this next generation standard. So it's going to be interesting to see how this rolls out. It's an important next generation step, and it's comparable with the work that's going on in DVB as well as Arrive in Japan, and as well as the cable industry through Open Cable.
So all this is about standards. It's about having platforms that can play these standards. It's about who's controlling the platforms. Darren, if you haven't sensed it already, I'm ready to pitch a question to you. Looking at this whole industry for PBS, looking what can be done at a national level, looking what's possibly to be done at an individual station level, talk about what are the deployments that are most interest to you and where you think we have the biggest opportunity and the challenges.
I think, you know, across the country, the most aggressive activities happening at Cablevision with their Sony set-top box. They're committed to...
This is in New York.
This is in New York. They're committed to actually doing a swap out at the home without looking for an immediate ROI on that box. They obviously believe that T-commerce is going to be very successful for them. And so I think that's one of the most interesting activities going on. Charter has adopted a Digio / Liberate middleware and are committed to rolling it out in St. Louis and Los Angeles over the next 6 to 8 months. I think that's a really interesting market. AT&T is having a lot of trouble a lot of turmoil internally, and a lot of people had expected that they would be most aggressive. But what PBS is trying to do is, wherever there's a trial, to immediately engage the local station and develop a local national content model, whether it be as simple as a walled garden site that lives on that cable operator's portal, or actually delivering enhanced content and having an impact now and setting precedent for the way the content's carried and conditioning the MSO and the viewer to accept enhanced content through the local station.
Okay. Now, I want to get to data broadcasting, and then we'll have time for some more questions. I want to pitch it now down to Mark. As a company that's involved in both, and so is Nandu, kind of describe how you see data broadcasting as being distinct from enhanced television, how they're related, and the role you see in the future.
Sure. Compared to data broadcasting, enhanced television is easy. The enhanced television, I would say, is a subset of data broadcasting. You certainly have issues like you have caching, you have content, but that content tends to have a life cycle that is related to the program, or at least related perhaps to the PVR functions that the device might have as a client. When you get into data broadcasting, you get into a number of other issues. I believe that data broadcasting is really only viable to a very rich set-top box. It doesn't really work for a box that only has 1 megabyte of cache. And when you get into a very rich set-top box, and which I would particularly define as has a very large hard drive, let's say 50 gigabytes might be a typical one in the next year or so, because that's a typical drive going out with a PC today. You get into issues about how to protect contents, store content, manage your cache, control whether it's in a private cache or a public cache. That is, have I stored this into my collection that I want to keep it around, or is it under control of an automated cache manager? So data broadcasting really just steps it up one level. So I would describe enhanced television as a subset. And you could say that data broadcast is almost enhanced television meets PVR. It's I have the time shift functions, I have the large hard drive, but I just have a lot more complexity within the box. And one of the great challenges of data broadcast is to hide all that complexity from the consumer and as much as possible from the content producer and the network and the station. And I think that's really where the next 5 years' worth of challenge is going to be. But I think there's some very interesting things that can happen in the next 12 to 24 months.
Okay. I had a question right up here. I know this woman asked a long time ago.
Hi, this is Gens from Idaho Public Television. And my question really is a follow-up on your comments, Mark, on data broadcasting. Mm-hmm. There's a new potential immediacy with John Lawson's offer that the public broadcasters set aside 4.5 megs, perhaps, you know, for data broadcast, broadband broadcast for education. What do you see are the hurdles to broadcasting this data that's unrelated to program video to the schools, just to caching servers?
If I can just say one preface, now somebody correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that the commitment is that 4.5 megabits of our data stream be used for education. That might be video programs in the traditional multicasting sense, data casting or anything. So I don't know if that's different from what you'd understood.
Well, I think there's that ambiguity in exactly how that 4.5 megabits might be used. But I'm interested in knowing not what the hurdles are, but what the stepping stones are and what your estimate is, the time it would take us as a system to get to the place where we could actually be broadcasting data unrelated to program.
Okay,
I'll give you a chance.
It's a very good question. Let me take one step back, because I actually want to talk about the issue of program. If I were to keep the conversation limited to, say, a video program, so let's assume we just wanted to send out an educational video, which therefore would be very similar in one sense to what you call traditional television, except you're doing it as a file. You're sending a file and then you're playing back a file. I think that would help illustrate what some of the issues are, because now we're really talking about the same content viewed in a different way. So in the world as it exists today, we already have, of course, TV, and then we have the PVR, and the PVR is really the time shifting of that. And data broadcast really can be viewed in that narrow sense as the limited evolution of the PVR. Now the concept isn't I'm watching live TV and I hit the pause button. The concept is I received the program, and at whatever time I come home and I hit the play button is when the program happens to be engaged. So if I were to try to deliver content to a school today, Well, in a limited sense, we can do that. Now, there's all kinds of problems and challenges in setting up the head end, making the receivers work reliably, which I won't kid you is certainly one of the major issues right now. But we can send 4.5 megabits today to a school.
Okay.
Sorry?
I want to, Nandu also wanted to comment on this. We're running short on time.
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine, Mark.
Data broadcasting is easy to do, and it has tremendous value. We've been doing that over the air terrestrial since 1999. I think in the PBS community, stations like NJN, I see Bill Schnarbus and Rick Williams there, even before they got an encoder on the air, they were doing data casting, and it was an educational application. The data was Department of Labor generated content, training videos and training content that was being sent, that is being sent to the satellite offices. So it's serving today a useful role for state agencies to send the data to various other offices and saving the state a fair amount of cost, operational cost, as well as capital investment in equipment. So it's easy to do. It has very high value. It's easy to realize those values, especially for educational purposes. And it's much simpler to do than enhanced television. You don't need to have all of the complex connections between automation and traffic and your data servers and so on. You can set up a certain bandwidth, and then you can just start scheduling all kinds of educational content, whether it's to schools or to Department of Labor offices, you know, all kinds of training kind of information. I'd strongly encourage you to talk to Rick Williams and to Bill Schnarbus to get their experience in this.
Okay, next question. Anybody? Well, maybe we have lots of time. Here's Jack. This will be a good one, I know.
Thank you, Bruce. You just put me on the spot. mine's sort of a half question, half comment. We just got finished with a big debate over the modulation standard for digital television, 8BSB, COFDM. What should we do? And all the consensus is that it really slowed down the process. The reality is we need to get a standard set for the digital data broadcast so that people will say, okay, this is what I've got to work with. It may not be as good as we could do it next month. It may not be as good as we could do it tomorrow, but let's set it so we can work with it, the parameters, and start using it and have people start authoring for it.
So we've got a standard for data broadcasting. The ATSC has done that. Michael, when do you think DDE will be done? What's your guess?
It'll be completed, I think, this year. I mean, you never know with the standards process, but the trial publication documents ought to start appearing this summer, and I would expect by the end of the year that they'd be finalized.
How about DAZE?
DAZE is on a similar track, but there's already a building block from ATSC, the A90 data broadcast standard, which has been out for a while, and that's a building block that allows you to carry, brings you up from the MPEG transport to a layer where you could carry any number of different types of applications. It's not an authoring interface, it's not an authoring environment, but it builds up the infrastructure needed to carry data, and that's actually out and available to take a look at. So we're getting real close on this, and I think we've got a circular dependency between the availability of the receivers, the inclination of the programming departments to generate the content, and the ability of the distribution system to carry it from the origination to the receiver. And all these need to interact, and they all need to go in lockstep forward.
Bill?
So this may be obvious, but to focus on digital as the sole carrier for enhanced and interactive television content is to really miss the boat. There's a lot of interactive television going on today. I mean, all of those web TVs out there, and for that matter, the AOL TVs and every other receiver that's really doing interactive television right now, is based around analog television. It's based around an easy scenario is ATVEF Transport A. It works very well within the pitfalls that Bruce has defined, but you can play along with Jeopardy, and you can play along with Wheel of Fortune, and you can do all kinds of stuff on CBS. And if you're interested in starting to develop
the production paradigms for this stuff, the creative paradigms for this stuff, and start to build a viewership so that as the translation to doing this with a more sophisticated and fatter digital pipe develops, I would encourage you to start doing that now. You don't need to wait for digital, for interactive television. There's no requirement for that.
Now, here's a somewhat related question, pitched to Scott. What's Microsoft interest in all this stuff? And what kind of deals do you got going with Bill? And who else do you got deals with going here? And
we love Scott.
Well, I'm proud to say that both Trevini and Chiron are, and I believe Wave Express, are members of this little program that we have called the Microsoft TV Tools Program, where we try to, it comes back to the complexity of this problem. I mean, the problems that you outlined, I spend all day thinking about. I have my whiteboard with these big chart of, we need pieces here, here, and here, you know, to do all this. And I'm a little more bullish on the prospect of getting it done because we have all these smart people on my left and my right working on it. And they're integrating it into the current processes. You know, in a trial, it's like a heart bypass, but in the real world, it's gonna be deployed as upgrades to the products that you know and love today.
Okay, let's do a quick block diagram of something that, when I first saw it, I thought, this is kind of cool. And it involves, we'll say Scott's the content author, and Bill's running his Chiron box, and it's hooked to Nandu's gear, and run through how that process works, from content idea to authoring to interface to the data broadcast to make it work.
Well, funny you should mention that. That's my next challenge. In my defense, I spent the last 8 months filling in the boxes.
Okay.
Now there are arrows between the boxes. Once we've got the content authored in an editing system ready to go, we've merged the stuff from the HTML authors with the video program because and now how do we deliver it to the national broadcaster? You know, the national broadcaster, they schedule it. How do they get it out, you know, on the servers so that, you know, how do they engage with a company like Akamai, for instance, to make sure that the servers are there to be and ready?
Well, let's get it to Bill so he can get it to Nandu so we can get it off.
I'm sorry, I'm supposed to give it to Bill. And Bill is which part again?
We actually have, you know, maybe a couple of little niches in there, you know, both the content creation side sort of, you know.
Yeah.
So we've got some PC-based tools for developing content based around, you know, television authoring paradigms. And we've got tools that let production people insert that content into the program on the fly in live programming or in a post-production process, as do many other companies. You know, as Scott indicated, in the nonlinear editing world, companies like Avid are getting involved in this. I mean, you know, real television companies are starting to build the tools. Then iSend, in the case of Triveni, when we author the content,
which is like taking a character generator, like a regular operator, and what I thought was cool.
That's another piece. Let me get to that in 1 second. So just the simplest possible chain. You don't have a Chiron character generator. You've never heard of one. You hate Chiron because we're ugly. So you've got this thing in a PC, and you build content that looks and feels like television, and your production team puts it in the signal, and it bundles it. It knows what assets it's generated, and it bundles them up and hands them off to Nandu at Triveni, and he nicely pushes them in the system and manages the bandwidth, and manages divvying up the packets into the carousels of data that have to be scheduled out, and it hits the home receiver and it works. I think the other little thing that you were talking about, which we like a lot, is if you do need to associate interactivity synchronously with a program, and let's say you don't have a lot of budget, so you don't want to add warm bodies, you don't want to add a producer to do that, certainly for the kind of programming where you're putting graphics up on air, which sports and news, for instance, and for you guys, I know, you know, news is a significant issue. News is a very good kind of programming medium for interactivity because people are motivated to seek information, as is a lot of your program content. Interactivity is probably not as good a scenario for long format entertainment where it may well be distracting. But what we've developed jointly with Microsoft and some of the other people here is a scheme where we can dynamically link the on-screen graphics with pre-associated interactive content automatically. So in other words, as graphics come up on screen, even from old graphics equipment, to track the show, the act of inserting those graphics into the regular television signal passes information about the content of the graphics to the interactive application to automatically synchronize. And that's something that, you know, is nicely developed now. And
they can see that at your booth.
Oh, all of the above. They can see at our booth and Nandu's booth and all around the place.
Okay. And very quickly, Nandu, what box would I need to take that information from Bill's box and get it out in the air?
Yeah, you'll see that running in our booth with the Chiron Lyric system that does the content authoring, the click a button. Our Skyscraper data hub, data fab, digests that information. And then as Bill mentioned, it schedules and inserts that content into the digital bitstream.
Okay. And now, Mark, you've got ATFEF compatibility in your platform. And would that same content play on your platform?
In theory, yes. And in practice, often so. But we've certainly seen content that's not interoperable as well. Source HTML4 and so forth, but you'll have certain circumstances under which you'll still see problems, but usually if you pre-tested it to the two platforms, you'll be fine.
Now, if I author for ATFEF DDE, and then people start getting Dave's boxes, will it play on those, Michael?
The short answer is no. The longer answer is that one of the design points for the declarative component of the Days device was that it be functionally compatible with ATVEF or DDE, and that a transcoding or re-encoding of the data would be technically possible. So part of the ATSC Days standard that covers this area actually has an annex that says, and here's how you go from one to the other. Syntactically and bitwise, if you were to feed an ATVEF stream into a pure Days device, it wouldn't know what to do with it. Now, you know, it's not going to prevent people from building devices that are capable of doing both, too.
And Darren, how bullish is PBS on ATVEF specifically as a standard for content authoring?
We're only developing content for open standards. We're not developing proprietary content, and so I think it's a
and those proprietary ones would be some examples of
Open TV.
Wink is another
Wink
one.
Wink claims to be ATVEF compliant, initially they weren't. So we're trying to create one to play everywhere. Mm-hmm. But even the ATVEF compliant boxes, you still have cable operators that are requiring different sort of user interfaces that make it even more complicated. So it's not just a matter of standards; it's also a matter of navigation requirements.
Okay. Well, I think we did the whole block diagram here. Question.
Rick Williams, NJN. I just heard my name mentioned a couple of times. I just wanted to chime in. At NJN, we ran both ATVEF platforms, the Triveni and the Wave Express. And they worked. I mean, they worked fine. And actually, the triggers were in sync for 1109, our third trial. Up until the local enhancement on the one, but that we'll figure that one out for the fourth trial. But in terms of data casting, not only the ATVEF can be run, but there are server-to-server applications that can be run, and also live data casting can be done as well, which we demonstrated along with ETA back a few months ago. So there's a lot of opportunities there outside of ATVEF.
This is all on top of the AV content, too.
Okay, so. Thank you. Rick? Bill?
The concept looks great, but as far as operationally, when you think about dealing with this on a regular basis at a station, it looks like the implementation's got quite a ways to go. When do you think you'll get to the point where maybe through the standardization of servers as far as file formats and whatnot, where we could get a file of a program that has all this stuff in it, and we just dump it into our server and play it out as a data stream? Is there work going on for that to happen so that we don't have to have 69 boxes at our station to...
I'll give Scott a stab at this.
Well, there's an association called the Advanced Authoring Format Association, which is working on a lot of those issues. They are stepping back. It depends on how you define authoring and delivery, as far as how far AAF will take you. But that's certainly a framework from which you can define a delivery standard for content to a station, which has all of these elements, which can then be loaded back into an asset system, converted probably back into AAF and run in an AAF asset environment. And AAF is just a file format which is built to allow you to track not only what an asset is, but what other assets went into making it, and to link multiple sets of assets together. So you have audio as an asset and video. You have an AAF file, audio is one asset, video is the other asset. That video may be made up of the assets from the raw video, or assets that are linked to another show. Like if you were to take an excerpt of Sesame Street, then you would be able to track back to the episode of Sesame Street in your system that cut was taken from. You can go from your news story, which takes a cut like that, all the way back. So there, once again, there are people attacking it. As far as how do we get it from the content author to the station, and how does the station pass it around their servers, that's an extremely good question.
It would look like if there's some way to standardize some kind of a file format to include this data and these triggers and whatnot in this one program file, so that we could download this file from PBS, put it on our server, and play it out. Because if we've got to integrate all this stuff, I mean, I hear the testing that's going on is great, and it's really exciting technology and stuff, but a station will talk about, we did one show, you know, and it was wonderful, and we did all this stuff. But if we're going to look at doing this on a daily basis with a series and things like that, I think the level of complexity is going to change.
Can I have a quick
very quick, we're beyond time.
I think the content authoring and contribution is one piece of the puzzle, and there is a sort of a de facto standard developing with Avid, Intel, Microsoft, and others kind of developing this XML-based format. But that's only one piece of it. The other is really also the coordination between different pieces of equipment in the station, and there are standards required there, and they're just beginning, and some of them have not yet begun. In some cases, like the A90 standard, which signal how data discovery has to happen, how bootstrapping happens on the receiver side. Again, you need to have coordination between something like your PSIP generator and your data inserter. And while the A90 standard, you know, suggests and describes how the PSIP generator or whatever signals data, the presence of data, there's really no standard that, you know, that describes how these two pieces of equipment should talk to each other. And that's where some standardization is required. And whether it's SMPTE or ATSC, that's a different discussion altogether.
More work to do. This has been a tremendous honor to me to have these very knowledgeable panelists who also can explain it so well. Let's give them a big round of applause before we close out the day.